May it please the court. There's only one condition of probation that is guaranteed by the Missouri Constitution, and that is restitution. But it's not guaranteed to a defendant. It's guaranteed to the victims of the crime for which they have pled guilty to or been found guilty of. And that's why restitution is treated differently than all these other conditions of probation that we're here to talk about in the courts. The Missouri legislature recognized this after they passed 217-703, which is the Earned Compliance Credit Statute, in 2013 when they expanded Section 559-105 and expanded it to include all crimes committed in the state of Missouri, not just tampering and stealing. And that provision plainly states, no person ordered by the court to pay restitution pursuant to this section shall be released from probation until such restitution is complete. If full restitution is not made within the original term of probation, the court shall order the maximum term of probation allowed for such offense. I'm here today because the circuit court in my circuit chose not to follow this statute, instead attempted to discharge a probationer from probation far from the end of her restitution being complete and not even at the date listed by the Board of Probation Parole as her optimal or maximum date.
Which is your argument? Do the ECCs change the maximum term of probation because by law the term gets shorter as they earn ECCs? Or is it your position that it's 6 years?
No, well, my position would be that it's initially 5 years.
Yes.
That they earn ECCs while they're on probation, but they can't cash them in until restitution is complete.
That depends on what is the maximum term of probation. So hence my question to you, is the maximum term of probation what it is at the period, the 5 years when they first, the max that the judge could give initially, or the one extended year, so 6 years? Or is it that the maximum term, once they've accumulated ECCs, the maximum term of probation is by statute reduced to whatever that date becomes?
No, I do not believe it's reduced, Your Honor, because it can't be reduced because Section 559 does not allow them to be released from probation. That's why they use
until
that
they have, but after the maximum they can be released. You would agree that after 5 years or 6 years, depending, they have to be released, restitution or not, because there's no authority to keep them in.
Sure, I think that's the bounds the legislature.
But I'm asking you, why isn't that bound at the time that it is with the ECC credits? Because that's another statute that says you have to give them those, and that's the maximum they can serve then at that point.
Well, I think that, I think these two statutes are in conflict with one another directly, which has been now addressed by the amendment to the restitution statute, or to the ECC statute 217-703. And I think it's important to note that 217-703 was amended to comply with 559-105, not the other way around.
There may only be a conflict depending on what the meaning of the term maximum term of probation is, though, and that's why I'm asking you to focus on that.
Right. Well, so I think the maximum term of probation is 5 years, and if they have not completed restitution within the 5 years, then it becomes.
And why do you think that? Can you tell me, other than that benefits your position, but why should the court interpret it that way as opposed to the other way? Wouldn't that be ignoring the ECC statute?
Well, I would say that, Your Honor, because of what I said to start off with, that restitution is the one term of probation that's guaranteed by the Constitution. So if you reduce the term of probation without taking account the victim's right to restitution that's guaranteed in the Missouri Bill of Rights, then the statute is actually unconstitutional.
And I saw that argument. So what if we, do we have to garnish 100% of their wages or else we're unconstitutional? Do we have to do a whole lot of things? The Constitution doesn't say, absolutely, it makes restitution important, but it doesn't say you use probation as a means for that. And I was unclear from your argument why you think the Constitution has any requirement about how we manage probation.
Well, I think that it is important because it gives the trial court discretion to supervise probation, and it's one of the things it's the constitutional provision says as authorized by law, and probation would be one of those sections that's authorized to the circuit court. Certainly a crime victim could file a lawsuit.
It's a great means to enforce that, right? But there's lots of other means too. I'm unclear why you say it's required that we use this means as opposed to other means. Well, not that it's not a good idea. I fully understand why you think it's a really good idea.
I think it's probably the only real way that a victim could actually collect restitution. And like, for example, in the case that we're dealing with here, the defendant actually was part of the plea agreement for that. Part of the plea agreement here was that she agreed to pay restitution, and actually it was a reduced amount based upon her ability to pay after consultation with the victim. They were in agreement with that amount, and so it became part of the plea agreement. It became part of the bargain for me to recommend a probationary term versus a prison term. So I think that the answer to the question is it's the best way in all practicality to collect restitution. Certainly we're not asking victims to go file civil suits that they probably can't collect on. And if we use ECC to reduce the term of probation down to 2.5 years without any notice to any of the parties, then there's no, we really have cut off the ability of victims to collect
restitution. Well, it's just applying the statute, and the question is what the statute means. That's our only option.
Right. Well, and I think that the problem is the statutes conflict. Now, I think that...
And I guess that's my concern. If the statutes conflict, then how did the trial court abuse its discretion?
Well, I think it abused its discretion a number of ways. Number one, the statutes conflicted, so the court should have probably harmonized those two statutes instead of just trumping 5591. I don't know how they get around the trial court got around the plain language of 559105, which says they shall not be released from probation. That's exactly what the trial court did. I will also point out that the Board of Probation and Parole was not awarding ECCs in this case because there's a local court rule. And so when I, as a prosecutor, did not receive any notice that she was...
But your local court rule conflicts with the statute, and you were told that in Parrott by the Eastern District, it says you don't start accruing credits, whereas the statute clearly says you accrue credits each month that you're in compliance. It doesn't say unless your plea agreement says you don't or your local rule says you don't.
Well, in the court relied on Parrott, and I would say that their reliance was misplaced, because if you look at the Parrott decision, it never references section 559105.
Well, what I'm concerned about is the local rule, which says you don't begin to accrue ECCs even though you've met the requirements for ECCs under the statute, and your local rule can't conflict with the statute.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, but I'm...
Nobody ever challenged the validity of the local rule, did they? Neither the defendant nor the probation and parole challenged the local rule.
And
in fact, the probation and parole honored the local rule in this case.
That's correct. And also in the...
Nobody sought review of that.
No.
They gave no ECCs the entire time?
Well, what I'm saying is no, they would not have earned ECCs. Now, I believe how probation and parole did it was they would then kind of backdate their ECCs. If they had paid restitution off, they would then grant them the ECCs that they had earned.
Remind me as to what the court's order said. Because the statute in subsection 1 allows a trial court to order no ECCs accrue based on the nature of the offense. And is there anything about, I mean, the local court rule and the order in this case, so it provides that the judge could provide no ECCs accrue, but it doesn't. Is it only on the basis of the nature and circumstances of the offense or the history or character of the offender, where in this case it's done solely on the restitution order?
Right.
The local rule.
Well, the plea agreement in this case complied with the local court rule, but that was part of the basis of the bargain here was...
Yeah, but you can't agree to violate the statute. I mean, if the statute says shall...
Well, so does 559105.
But the statute says shall accrue credits in certain circumstances. Is it your position a local court can ignore that by rule?
No. It would not be my interpretation that they can ignore. Now, I think my position is that the local court, the court should have, and the way you synthesize these statutes at that time was that they earned compliance credits, but they can't cash them in until they have completed restitution. Once they completed restitution, then they could cash their, I use that term, but they could use the they could use
the current version. The revision in effect does that.
Yes,
the
and
newest
I think that's
version. But the question is back at the time here, how do we interpret it?
Right. Well, and I think that the revision gives you an idea of how the legislature would like it interpreted, because of course I believe that the legislature is attempting to protect that constitutional right of victims while balancing the rights of defendants, because it's not unlimited. It's set to 5 or 6 years.
So the trial court here chose to follow 559.105 instead of the 217.703 that was in effect at the time?
No, the trial court ruled that 217.703 was required him to discharge the probationer from probation, and this was in March, and he said retroactive to November. I had filed my motion to revoke in January. However, the date of discharge listed in the violation reports was sometime in 2019. So I had been given no notice of any discharge date or anything. In fact, it had been that the defendant had recalculated her time and then made a motion for discharge. And so the court granted that motion.
Okay, but the 217.703 now has been amended effective August 28th of 2018 to say that restitution has to be paid before ECCs can be credited.
That's correct.
All right. Your opponent argues that this amendment should not apply because it adds a disability, a new disability, to a past transaction. Would you reply to that?
Yes. First of all, I don't think it adds anything because I think Section 559.105 already had that requirement in it. But secondly, I think this is just a mere procedural change. And I would point the court to the Southern District's decision in Bell versus State, where they had added the statute had changed to add an that you could add a 6-year probation. And the defendant was added that. He argued, hey, they're adding time to my punishment. And the court said probation's not a punishment. It's actually.
And if things that aren't complete, then you don't have the argument necessarily that it's retroactive. If someone is in the second year of their probation and this new statute went into effect, they don't. There's cases that indicate that while it's still pending, they might not have a vested right in the prior procedure. But if somebody's already been granted release under the old provisions, you're not arguing we can pull them back in now because the new ones retroactively would not have allowed their release.
No, I mean, I don't think I would argue that, but I think.
So the question here is, and it might be decided in your favor or the other side, is had he already had a vested right to release before the new statute went into effect, or did he not for the reasons you're arguing and therefore the new statute might apply?
I would say that they do not have it for the reasons I'm stating.
Well, probation and parole didn't suggest that he did have it. It suggested a date in 2019.
Yes, that's correct. That they said that's why I had to receive no notice that this person was coming up, because they said the date was in 2019.
At least in this case, they were interpreting the statute in the way that you are.
Yes.
But going back to the 2018 revisions, how could we find that the trial court abused its discretion by not following a change in the law that happened after the judge made the decision?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's because Section 559.105 existed, and so that's the law.
So, I mean, do we have to decide whether the substantive or the 2018 legislation applies here?
No, I don't think so, because I think Section 559.105 controlled in this case, but I think it's very instructive as to what the proper interpretation of the two statutes together at that time should have been, now that the legislature has actually spoken to fix the conflicts. I think it's important to note they didn't fix 217.703, or they didn't fix 559.105 to comply with 217.703. It was the other way around. They fixed 217.703 to comply with 559.105, and that's because restitution is that important. Thank you.
May it please the court.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case boils down to one main thing at its core, and that is that the state did not have an affirmative manifestation of intent to revoke the defendant's probation during the term of probation. If we look at 559.105 and we look at 217.703 and we look at 559.021, those are all the statutes that govern probation. It's not just the two statutes as the relator has in their brief. It's all of those statutes that we have to look at and harmonize. And in my brief, I pointed to where this court basically said in State X. Rel. Bowman v. Inman that 559.021 and 559.100 give the court very broad discretion, and one of those discretions is restitution. In that same case, this court held that 559.105 act as a statute that narrows the scope of restitution that can be ordered against the defendant based on actual losses to the victim attributable to the defendant. Further, in 559105, it specifically states when restitution is ordered pursuant to this section. Now, that, again, may have been an oversight of the legislature, as we've already heard this morning, but at the end of the day, 559105, in this case, restitution was not ordered pursuant to that section. Restitution was generally ordered under the broad discretion of the court under 559.021 and 559.100. When the defendant's earned compliance credit statutorily reduced her term of probation, then her maximum term of probation becomes the date every month that the statute statutorily reduces that date to. In this case,
well, that's her term of probation, but what does the word maximum add in that context? How does, you say that's her maximum term of probation, which decreases every month for every month served, right? One additional month for every month served.
Yes, Your Honor, absent a motion to revoke or extend probation during the term of probation.
Right, well, but the motion to revoke, no, the earned compliance credit is earned. And unless there's a motion to revoke that tolls those and or a motion to rescind them, they stay, even if the probation is subsequently revoked, right?
Yes, well, once the probation is revoked, no, Your Honor, the earned compliance credits go away.
Well, I mean, if it's timely revoked, then it doesn't matter what the earned discharge date would have been.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor, and that's my argument. The fact was that it wasn't timely revoked. There was no motion made during the term of probation.
Well, that assumes that the question in the case, if 559-105 is construed the way that the state is asking us to construe it, then I don't think that position is correct. Am I right?
Not entirely, Your Honor, with all due respect, and the reason for that is because in the initial summary report produced by the Missouri Department of Probation and Parole, when the defendant in this case went on probation, dated November 21st of 2014, on page 3 at the bottom, they specifically say continued supervision compliance will result in an optimal discharge date of 3-1 of 17. So that takes the optimal discharge date 2 years back from where the relator is arguing that it's in 2019. The reason that it's in 2019 is because after this probation and parole summary report was prepared, the local court rule went into effect, and probation and parole relied on that local court rule and weren't giving earned compliance credit. But prior to that local court rule and under the earned compliance credit statute, the Board of Probation and Parole gave an optimal date of March 2017.
I understand an optimal discharge date to mean all the credits, not that you have earned, but that you will earn in the future if there are no violations. That's your understanding of it?
It is, Your Honor. And in fact, in this case, the defendant's probation, she had some issues early on, and she was actually sent to CODS, court-ordered detention sanction, which under the statute 559.036, CODS does not reset earned compliance credit. It resets earned compliance credit, but it does not result in a second term of probation. So when she came out of CODS in March, she was still on the same term of probation, and she started earning earned compliance credits again and accruing those credits. And those credits again statutorily discharged or reduced the term of her probation for 30 days, every 30 days that she was in compliance. And in Parrott v. Martinez, we see the plain and ordinary meaning and unambiguous language of the statute is an initial violation report, a motion to revoke, or they're declared an absconder. Nowhere does it talk about having restitution paid in full. The statute didn't discuss that until the 2018 amendment just a couple of months ago. And under the broad discretion of the court to order restitution, just like they can order court costs and other things, failure to pay restitution in full was not something that prevented the accrual and application of earned compliance credit.
And if you look at the statutes you're telling us to look at, that's what they say, and you say what compliance is, but opposing counsel points out there's another statute that says you shall not release them from probation until they have, well, it says that if they have not paid restitution, then they shall, I don't have the words, extend to the maximum term of probation if they have not paid all the restitution. Is that right? So how do you give meaning to that statute also?
Your Honor, the way that I would give meaning to that statute is, again, I would place the burden back on the state, like 559.036 does in a litany of cases that have gone before the courts in Missouri that say the state has to have an affirmative manifestation of an intent to revoke the probation during the term of probation. They have to make every reasonable efforts to notify the probationer of that motion to revoke and to have a hearing. And there are certain circumstances where that can extend beyond the discharge date. But in this scenario, the state didn't meet either prong of those requirements. Their motion to revoke was filed in January or February of the following year.
So you're saying before the time had expired for their probation, before they reached the date where the ECC's entitled them to release, they might have been able to file a motion saying this person has not fully paid their restitution and therefore they should not be released. But they failed to do so till after, and the statute, they lost authority by that point to do anything.
That is exactly my argument, Your Honor. Had the state taken action prior to November of 2017, when the earned compliance credits discharged the defendant in this case from probation, had they filed a motion to extend the probation for a failure to pay restitution, then I believe that that's where 559-105 comes into play.
And to be fair to opposing counsel, he's saying because of the local rule, he didn't get notice that time was coming up. But whose burden is that? Then who bears that problem that Board of Probation and Parole did not give notice?
But Your Honor, I mean, I believe that the burden lies with the Missouri Department of Corrections Board of Probation and Parole, but at the end of the day, I think tie goes to the runner. I don't think that the defendant in this case should be held responsible for Board of Probation and Parole not doing their job.
Well, but did they give the credits or not in this case? They didn't give them based on the local rule. Whether the rule's valid or not, nobody had challenged the rule, and they did not give the credits. Correct?
I challenged the rule, Your
Wait,
Honor.
When?
In my motion to discharge the defendant
right,
from probation.
After all, but up until that time.
Up until that
they
time.
They hadn't given them.
Not other than in the initial report when they gave her an optimal date of March of 2017.
But they
then
didn't
the local court rule changed that date to 2019.
But they didn't actually, in that initial report, they weren't giving them ECCs, giving the defendant ECCs at that point in time.
Oh,
they were
no,
just
Your
saying
Honor,
if everything works out real well.
They were recognizing yes. She could earn ECCs.
Right. Yes, she hadn't accrued them yet, so you're absolutely right, Your Honor. They weren't giving them, but they were looking into the future, if you will, and if she remains in compliance for every month of probation, this would be an optimal discharge date. Now, unfortunately, that didn't happen because she got sent to COD.
Did you have some statutory obligation to challenge Board of Probation and Parole's error before it would have affected your client's release? Did you waive it by not doing anything in the first year, or did you do it timely when you filed for release when you would have been entitled to it under the statute properly?
Judge, I believe that I did it timely, and the reason why is working for the Missouri State Public Defender's Office, this defendant hasn't been my client the whole time. I got into this case after the motion to revoke probation was filed by the state. The court found that her due process rights required the assistance of counsel, and I was assigned the case as a Missouri State Public Defender. I was not involved in this case during the initial plea.
I'm asking, is there any case law or statute that requires you to have brought this earlier than you did?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, because I brought it in a timely fashion once I became aware of it.
I mean the public defender's office, not you, of course.
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, no. I think everybody kind of took the local court rule at face value until I dug into it a little bit deeper and believed that it violated the decision in Parrott v. Martinez. It violated the plain language of the statute. It violated Missouri Supreme Court Rule 2918. It violated 559 points. I mean, there was a host of things. And the respondent in this case, Judge Beeger, recognized that per my motion to reconsider my motion to discharge and realized that local court rule was in violation of.
Did the court say that?
Yes. In the conclusions, the findings of fact and conclusions of law, Your Honor, yes, I believe he did find and he stated in there that the local court rule did not comply with case law or with Missouri statute.
But doesn't the local court rule allow the judge to grant ECCs, regardless of the requirements, where it says that they shall not accrue if restitution is there? I have that in my notes. That may not be correct.
The local court rule, the way that it was written at the time, Your Honor, was a blanket rule that basically said no defendant will get earned compliance credit as long as they have outstanding restitution, period.
And I don't have it in front of me, but I have some notes here that indicate later down the rule says that the judge has discretion, though, to grant ECCs in accordance with Missouri law if the judge wants to.
I believe you're correct, Your Honor, and I want to say that's probably like subsection 2 or 3 of the rule. There was something at the end of the rule that does say that. However, that did not happen until I made this motion to have the client discharged from probation.
Counsel, there was a plea in this case, correct?
Sir, I'm sorry.
There was a plea in this case, correct?
Yes,
Your Honor. And you weren't involved in that plea?
I was not, Your Honor.
But at the plea, I have some indication that there was a discussion about earned compliance credits at the plea.
And my understanding is also, Your Honor, from looking at the docket entry, that there was. Our position is that a defendant's not able to waive a statutory right to earn compliance credit.
The defendant can waive his right to appeal at a plea, correct?
I think by statute, the earned compliance credits are the award or rescission of them.
No, that's not my question. My question is, a defendant can waive his right to appeal at a plea, correct?
Yes, under 2915 and 24.035, yes, Your Honor.
So why can't they waive their right to earn compliance credits?
Our position, Your Honor, is that the trial court is not in a position to grant or take away those earned compliance credits. That falls under the purview of the Missouri Department of Corrections.
To appeal is...
That right, though.
Sir?
The defendant has waived that right to get those, to receive those, during the course of this plea.
Yes, Your Honor, but our argument is that the trial court was not in a position to accept that waiver of that right because they don't have any control over that right. It's outside the purview of the court.
It's different than the right to appeal, isn't it? Because you always have that in your discretion. To appeal or not, our law does not mandate you appeal, but it does mandate the board and probation and parole give ECC credits when certain requirements are met. And a defendant can't waive the board of probation and parole following its obligations under the law.
That's our argument, Your Honor, because an appeal at the end of the day falls to the defendant despite the objections of the attorney. This is a shall award. This is something that was put in place by our legislature, and the Board of Probation and Parole shall do this.
Yeah, but the judge shall not release somebody short of the maximum term of probation until they've paid their restitution. So how can the judge comply with both? How can the judge comply with the mandate not to release them and the mandate to consider their term to be the reduced term under the ECCs?
Well, Your Honor, I think that goes back to my earlier argument that 559-105 is a supplemental statute to 217.703. That original intent, as the relator stated, was for stealing and tampering offenses. And those very specific offenses, those crimes against person where their personal property is being taken, required that if restitution was ordered pursuant to that section, then a person could not be discharged from probation or released from probation without having paid restitution in full. And the only remedy for the court at that point was to extend the term of probation, not revoke probation, not send the defendant to prison, but was just to extend the term of probation.
And how would we know in a given case whether restitution was ordered pursuant to 559-105?
I think it's incumbent upon the state and the defense attorneys to make sure that that's noted in the docket entry, that in this case, instead of under 559.021 or 559-100 or 559-036, where restitution is generally ordered, in this particular case, restitution is ordered pursuant to 559.105.
But
that was not done here.
Isn't it an answer to Judge Wilson's question that say your client was given 3 years probation and started earning credits but failed to pay restitution, the court could have extended it to 5 years and then continued earning credits. But your maximum term under the credits is going to be less than that 5 years. But the court, it gives meaning to the word maximum because if you only got 3 years probation, the court could still extend it to five, but then the credits have to be applied to whatever that term is, 3 or 5 years.
Yes, and part of the statute is that a defendant has to serve at least 2 years of the probation term before earned compliance credit can even kick in and help discharge them from probation. So the maximum term when you're talking about restitution, you have indigent defendants that are represented by the Missouri State Public Defender's Office, and then you have more affluent defendants. They're going to be able to pay their restitution in full, and now they're getting the benefit of earned compliance credit, whereas the indigent defendants are not. And the court looked at this in Pereira v. Martinez and recognized the disparity that was there. And this court has looked at several other cases that are not in my brief. State X. Rel. Fleming versus the Missouri Board of Probation and Parole. State X. Rel. Hawley v. Spear, where they found, you guys have found, this court has found that the 14th Amendment, when we're dealing with indigent defendants, we have to have a hearing. We have to do other steps beyond just jump to 559-105 and extend their probation or revoke their probation. None of that happened in this case during the term of probation. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honors. I'd like to give a brief conclusion, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Based on the fact that the relator did not make an affirmative manifestation of intent to revoke the defendant's probation in this case during the term of probation, the respondent respectfully requests this court to not issue a permanent writ of probation and allow the respondent's original order to discharge the defendant from probation as stated in the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, what do we do with this argument that this wasn't restitution pursuant to 559-105 and therefore the language of that statute's not relevant to this decision?
Well, I think that's a spurious argument because if you look at the docket entry in this case, it specifically says no ECC until restitution's paid in full. And that was done because it was ordered pursuant to section. In addition,
but that was per local rule. That's different than the statute. No, the statute certainly does not say no ECCs till restitution's paid in full.
But we were relying on 559-105 when we made.
But it doesn't say that.
Well, but we don't. No court is required to say pursuant to section. This section, I sentence you to 3 years in court jail. This section, I put you on probation. This section, I order you to complete community service. This section, that's just not how it's done.
No, and I understand your argument, but here they quoted the local rule, which does not comply with the statute. So how can you say it was by the statute?
No, what I'm saying is that ECC was specifically addressed in the plea agreement, and it was because of 559-105. That we knew that's why we thought it was lawful at the time and still do believe that it's a lawful court order, that she can't be released from probation until she either completes
the But didn't your plea agreement and didn't the rule say you don't start earning credits? That's a very different than what you're saying now can't be released.
Well, I think you can either interpret it either way. I'm trying to synthesize the two sections. You'd previously asked me how would I synthesize the two sections together, and that's what I'm doing. But I think by the terms of her plea agreement, which she enjoyed the benefits of her plea agreement for several years until she finally, you know, a motion to revoke was filed. To answer the question, she was represented at her plea by counsel. The plea agreement was signed by all the parties. I'm not so sure she shouldn't have tried to withdraw her plea of guilty if she didn't like the terms and conditions of the probation instead of trying to get off probation at this late date.
Well, here's my question. Did she waive it or was there no earned compliance credit given because of the local rule because of the statute?
So I think all three.
Before we get too far off,
let's discuss at the plea.
My understanding is that the local rule came up
after this case.
After she pled.
Right.
So let's don't get too far down that path.
Well, I don't know the date of the local court rule. I'll be honest with the court. I do know that the local court rule was passed at the time to address whether 559-105 applied to restitution cases, and the Department of Probation and Parole asked for those local court rules to clarify, and that's why circuit courts around the state did pass those local court rules. I did not answer your question, I don't believe. Did I?
No, you didn't.
Could you say it again?
I'm sorry. During the course of the plea, was the waiver of the earned compliance credit a waiver she made in order to receive the plea deal offered by the prosecutor, or was the earned compliance credits not to be given because of the local court rule? Was that distinction made or discussed?
I don't know if it was discussed, but it was listed as a condition on the docket entry that she signed and her counsel signed.
Was there any evidence in this case? Did you get to the point of arguing or taking evidence on whether she had the ability to pay restitution?
No, that was never addressed. And I did want to point that out, that we never addressed that issue. This is not the first motion to revoke that we went through with her about restitution, and that's never come up.
The statutes say the person has to pay restitution, and they can probation can be revoked for failure to pay restitution. But under the U.S. Constitution, under this court's decision in
Fleming, perhaps?
I'm sorry?
Might be Fleming.
Fleming. That they can only be revoked if they had the ability to pay and didn't willfully pay. So that's why I was asking whether you got to that point.
Well, I think that's the balancing act the legislature tried to do here, to both be constitutional to the victims as well as the defendant, which was there's a limit to how long you can be on probation. It's either 5 years or 6 years. So there's a limit there. In addition, I think it's the duty of the circuit court before revoking someone on probation that they take into account their ability to pay. It's a balancing act. Finally, I think that the standard in most of these cases is, as a prosecutor, I don't necessarily want her revoked. I want her to pay restitution to my victim. So we're not looking through revocation necessarily, even though that's the term we use and we have to file. What we're looking for is some sort of ability of the court to enforce the order of the court, the agreement of restitution. So I think that in this case, I don't know, I think it was a little premature to discuss that she was going to be revoked solely for restitution. Now, she had some other issues that might have caused her to be sentenced to Department of Corrections, but just purely restitution, I think that's a balancing act that circuit judge is required to do under the case law and the statutory law.
There was almost a 2-year period between her release from CODS and the motion to revoke for failure to pay restitution. Was she paying restitution during that almost two-year period?
Sporadically. So she would make a payment, then she wouldn't, and then we would have to basically ask the probation officer, and then she would make a payment. And my office policy at the time was we ran a report every quarter of who was more than 2 months behind on restitution, because if we do it every month, which is what I think we would have to do if this court decides that in the respondent's favor, we would clog up the docket with everybody who was 30 days behind in restitution. I did that 1 month. It was over 50 motions revoked in my small county. And so we tried to balance that out. We did it every quarter. That's why you see that motion to revoke filed January 1st, because we tried to do a balancing act. And obviously I didn't know she was coming off probation. I was being told continuously it was 2019, so I had no reason. And that's something else I think needs to be pointed out, is that you asked who the burden shifted to. I think it unfairly shifts the right to restitution to the state to calculate. I'd have to calculate every single person's ECC credits independently, because I can't rely on probation and parole if courts are going to continuously reverse what they have decided.
You're out of time, counsel.
Yes, thank you, Judge.
It's a well-argued case.